Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the June 7th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. As you can see, we are currently constituted as a subcommittee, but we've got lots going on and lots of bills to get through, so we're going to start taking some testimony, and then hopefully by the time we get very far, we will have been joined by another member. So I will begin by opening a public hearing on House Bill 3658, and I see that Representative Hunt has joined us to talk about that bill, and I believe it has an amendment with him, too. So, Erin, would you like to just briefly tell us what the bill is?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3658 directs Adjunct General to form a commission of five individuals to develop and name medal to honor Oregon's fallen military members, directs commission membership in addition to Adjunct General be two assistant Adjunct Generals and two veteran service officers, directs commission to present design to governor, and if design approved, directs governor to present proposed medal to 2013 Legislative Assembly. You have a -1 amendment which adds a member to the commission who is a military veteran who is a resident of Oregon who must be recipient of high military awards such as Congressional Medal of Honor, Silver Star, or Army Distinguished Silver Cross. We received a minimal fiscal impact on the -1, no revenue impact on the -1, and it comes to you from the House floor with the 59-01 vote.
Great. Well, welcome Representative Hunt to the Senate Rules Committee, and as chair of the House Rules Committee, I think this is the first time we've met across the dais this session, but I bet it won't be the last time.
That's true. Well, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, member of the committee. My two favorite members of the Senate Rules Committee, at least, are here. So, for the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. And this bill does come from the House with very strong bipartisan support. It really is an opportunity to, in a very tangible way, honor those who have sacrificed and actually, in this case, paid the ultimate sacrifice of serving our country and our state and dying in conflict. This would be a medal, and we don't get into trying to name the medal or to design the process or design the medal. We trust that to the Adjutant General and the team that he's going to pull together. But it will make it very clear this legislature has a tangible way to honor, and it really, I think it fills in addition to the actions we're taking around employment and health care and education and other specific benefits for veterans and their families, this is a very tangible way to recognize those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice in service to our state and our country. I actually think the bill is good to go, as is, without any amendments, so there may be others who want to speak to the amendments, but that was considered in the House side, and 59-0, think it's good to go as is.
Okay, great. Any questions for Representative Hunt? Okay. Thank you very much for being here. And we won't tell
the other
committee members what you said. Okay, we do have two other people signed up to testify. And we'll call them both together. Nicole Heft and John Huddle, please come forward. And members, thank you for being here. We had to start in because we have such a chock-full agenda, and we are hearing House Bill 3658. So please go ahead, introduce yourself, and tell us what you think.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nicole Hoft, and I'm with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I apologize, the Director, Jim Willis, is out of town, so I'll be testifying on his behalf. I'm here today in support of HB 3658. There is no more devastating loss than to lose one in combat. Families first go through the agony of separation and the worry that they really don't ever know if their loved one is safe. And then they get that knock on the door. Since 2003, more than 29,000 men and women of Oregon have served and answered that call of duty. This Memorial Day, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs added the 127th name to the Afghan-Iraqi Freedom Memorial Wall. And this is a wall of names that honors the Oregon service members who have fought and died for this country. Since the beginning of these conflicts, Oregon has done all that it could to support the Gold Star families. HB 3658 will eventually lead to another way for Oregon to show its deep and humble gratitude to these families during their time of loss. And that's all I have. Thank you for your consideration of this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
For the record, John Huddle from Lapine, Oregon. Greetings, Senator Rosenbaum, committee members. I'm going to make this short. You have my written testimony in front of you, I think. I testified for the original House Bill 2848, and this time around I looked at what these kinds of metals around the world have done for families. I have some examples there of the positive things that it does, and nobody can take away the hurt, the loss of a loved one, but I think it's important that we do provide a tangible evidence of Oregon's gratitude. When I testified for the original bill, I proposed that Mr. Bob Maxwell, our Medal of Honor recipient, be added to the committee. And the reason for that was that there was a lot of angst about the possible name of the bill. Mr. Maxwell is a very sensitive and kind gentleman. He had, by telephone, had agreed to be part of the committee. So I feel it'd be a gaffe not to include him, even though this is a different bill, but essentially the same, you know, the same concept. So I urge the committee to give to amend this with the -1 amendment and give it a due pass. I think it's a very deserving bill.
Okay. Any questions for these witnesses? Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you both very much for being here. And I don't see anyone else signed up to testify on House Bill 3658. So I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3658. And let's just take a moment to see who we have in the room and where we should go next. And I know that at 2:30, Senator Beyer, you're going to have to leave briefly, so we'll try to knock out as many things as we can in the meantime.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll be leaving briefly at 3.
At 3. Okay. Yeah. Why don't we quickly take up House Bill 2912A, so I'll open a work session on House Bill 2912A. And this is a bill we heard previously.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2912A was originally heard on May 5th, and 2912A requires automatic vote recount at nonpartisan primary election when candidate is within 1/5 of 1% of a majority vote, specifies that law does not apply to offices of sheriff, county clerk, or county treasurer, or if the nominating election is for the purpose of filling a vacancy. There is a fiscal impact statement with the measure and a no revenue impact statement with the measure. The measure did come from the House floor with a 59-1-0 vote.
Okay, so members, we heard this before. I think the bill is ready to go. The paperwork is all in order. So, Senator Farioli, did you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2912A to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
And Senator Farioli moves House Bill 2912A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's so ordered, and we need a carrier for the bill. Do we have a volunteer? Okay, then I guess the chair will carry the bill. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2912A. Okay. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 170. And we have, as posted, a bill before us and a replacement amendment. And Erin, you want to just briefly tell us what that is, and then we will call Nanheim forward to talk about it. Oh, Right, Inga Deckard. Sorry, we have too many things going on here.
Members of the committee, Senate Bill 170, the Dash 2 Amendment replaces the measure. It resolves a conflict between House Bill 2281, which is relating to residential treatment programs, and House Bill 3599, which is relating to education of students in day treatment programs. And what the amendment does, it allows the day treatment program and the residential treatment programs to coexist within the Oregon Department of Education Long-Term Care and Treatment Funding Statute. Both of those measures are currently in Ways and Means, awaiting further action until the conflict amendment is provided to them.
Okay, and I think Inga Deckard is here with us. So if you'd like to come forward, and while you're doing so, I will mention that Senator Cruz very generously volunteered up his bill for this purpose, so you definitely owe him one.
Indeed. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Inga Deckard, I'm here before you representing the Oregon Association of Treatment Centers, which are psychiatric day treatment centers for children. And as Aaron mentioned, Senator Cruz did graciously offer this bill for us. We needed a bill with a relating clause that was broad enough to allow a conflict amendment in the two House bills that Aaron mentioned, and this vehicle was made available, so we appreciate that. I'm not sure how much detail the committee wants about the substance of the bills. The conflict in, well, both bills were heard and passed out of the policy committees unanimously. There's no opposition to either bill, and unfortunately or fortunately for us, the conflict was recognized fairly late in the process, and so this is to reconcile the two bills, and as Aaron mentioned, the Ways and Means Committee plans on moving both the bills out, or moving now what is now Senate Bill 170 out once it's returned to them and the conflict is fixed.
Great. Thanks a lot. That was enough information for me. Did you have anything to add? Okay. Any questions? Okay. It looks like not. Okay. Thanks a lot for being here.
And just to mention, Madam Chair, we did receive a no fiscal impact and a revenue hall pass to Ways and Means. I mean, a fiscal hall pass to Ways and Means. So we do have the appropriate paperwork.
Great. So we need a motion on the Dash 2 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 170.
Senator Farioli moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 170. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Okay, amendment is adopted. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chairman, move Senate Bill 170 is adopted to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
It's also, Madam Chairman, as a referral to Ways and Means.
So, Senator Farioli, I heard you move.
Let me amend my amendment, Madam Chair.
We'll just let you restate.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 170 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 170 as amended with the Dash 2 amendment to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Motion carries, and it is so ordered, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 170. And Senator Beyer, while you were out of the room, we voted on House Bill 2912A. Would you like to vote on that?
Yes.
Okay. And so,
Chair, point of order.
Yes.
Do we have to reconsider?
We do not have to reconsider. We can reopen the work session for the purpose of allowing absent members to vote. So I'm going to do that. So I'll reopen the work session for the purpose of allowing absent members to vote on House Bill 2912. And Senator Beyer, how do you vote?
Votes aye.
Senator Atkinson, you missed a vote on House Bill 2912. Would you like to vote?
I'd be delighted. Thank you.
And how do you vote? You'd be in good company.
Yes.
And Senator Atkinson also votes aye. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2912A. And you also just missed another vote. and we had closed that work session too. So I'll reopen the work session for the purpose of allowing Senator Atkinson to vote on Senate Bill 170. And would you like to vote on that? This is a motion two
yes.
ways and means
yes.
as amended. Senator Atkinson votes aye. I'll close the work session.
Thank you very much, Madam
Great.
Chairwoman.
And so now, great timing. Okay. I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3112A. And I see Representative Cowan has joined us. And Erin, just want to tell us briefly?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3112A increases maximum amount of contributions and expenditures political committee is allowed to make without filing statements of contributions and expenditures to the Secretary of State's electronic campaign filing from $2,000 to $3,000. It comes to you from the House floor with a 58-20 vote. There is a no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on the measure.
Great. Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Jean Cowan. I represent House District 10. And this bill comes at the request of one of my constituents. And she's the chair of the Port of Newport Board of Commissioners, Jenny Goldlish. Some of you who were around last session may have had an opportunity to meet Jenny when she was here testifying and lobbying, I should say, on behalf of the Port of Newport. I have to say that there's probably not a more passionate advocate for our community. If you have met her, you'll know that what kind of a dedicated public servant she truly is and what level of personal time and energy she devotes to her role. But she had faced some unanticipated and innocent challenges during her campaign in 2007. She was initially appointed to the position and then ran for it in 2007. And those were detailed in an Oregonian article on November 5th that sort of got a lot of people's attention. And so we sat down and talked a little bit, did a little brainstorming about how we might make it just a bit easier for individuals in our communities to run for the local offices that are not compensated and often have low-dollar campaigns associated with them. The proposal before you in 3112 wouldn't really address the specific challenges that she had. She had ended up having to use her personal debit card to cover some expenses before she got her campaign checks. And when she reimbursed herself for those expenses, she listed herself as the payee, assuming that she was the one that was getting the money. Subsequently, the elections division came back and said, no, she couldn't do that. She needed to list whomever the actual charges were incurred with. And when she filed that correction, then she was given a fine charged for 259 days in late fee. So she was pretty unhappy about it, to say the least, and challenged it, realized how difficult it really is for people to fully understand in some of those kind of races, you know, everything that's required of them. But really, when we stopped and thought about it, if we could just raise that minimum amount, or maximum amount, I should say, of contributions and expenditures that a campaign or a political committee is allowed to make without having to file the statements of contribution and expenditures, perhaps it would make it just a bit easier for local folks who are in those small kinds of races. Initially, the bill that I filed changed that amount from $2,000 to $5,000. It was subsequently amended down to $3,000 in the House Rules Committee. And our basic intent is just to encourage participation and to not make people quite so afraid of the process if they're not into the kinds of campaigns that we experience in legislative and other state races. So that's the intent behind it.
Great. Well, thank you for bringing it to us. Any mm-hmm. questions for Representative Cowan? Doesn't look like it. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. If you can excuse me then, we are still on the floor today.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll let you get back to work. Thanks for being here. Okay, I don't see anyone else signed up to testify on this bill. So, did we open this only as a public hearing?
No, you did open it as a work session.
Okay, so members, we are in a work session on House Bill 3112, and the paperwork is all good to go?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have a no revenue and a no fiscal impact.
Okay, great. Is there a motion?
Madam Chairman, I move House Bill 3112A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 3112A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And is there a volunteer, Senator Beyer, to carry this
sure.
bill? Great. Okay. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3112A. Okay, I will open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 372. And this is the bill I was thinking of earlier. So this is a replacement of the original bill. And Erin, would you like to tell us about that?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 372, we had a dash 1 and a dash 2 amendment provided to members. The dash 1 replaces the measure, removes ambulance from the list of fee schedules used to calculate provider charges for personal injury protection benefits, and declares emergency effective upon passage. The dash 2 amendment also is a similar measure, replaces the measure, and removes ambulance from fee schedules used to calculate provider charges for personal injury protection. It declares emergency effect upon passage, but takes effect September 1st, 2011. There is a no expenditure impact and a no revenue impact on both the dash 1 and the dash 2 amendment.
Great, and I see Nan Heim and Sean Barrett are both signed up to testify, so if you'd like to come forward, tell us about this. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Nan Heim, representing the Oregon State Ambulance Association, in support of replacement amendment to Senate Bill 372. And with me is our association president, Sean Baird. Sean is a paramedic and also the co-owner and manager of Woodburn Ambulance Service. And we want to thank, first of all, you, Madam Chair, for scheduling this bill and the other members of the committee who have given me good advice and encouragement as we strive to solve this latest challenge facing emergency ambulance service in Oregon. We also want to thank the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association for graciously agreeing to have this bill amended. The background of this situation is, in 2003, the legislature increased personal injury protection benefits, the PIP benefits that we're all required to carry in our auto insurance to cover medical services in case of a motor vehicle accident. Negotiations on the bill were lengthy, as I recall, and resulted in an amendment to tie a fee schedule for PIP benefits for medical services to automobile accident victims to the workers' compensation medical services fee schedule. There was no impact on ambulances because, unlike almost every other medical service, there had never been a fee schedule for workers' compensation benefits to pay medical services for injured workers. However, on April 1st of this year, a new fee schedule for workers' compensation to ambulance services went into effect. And within several weeks, I began hearing from ambulance services around the state that they were getting paid at this lower rate by automobile insurers. And this has a huge impact. The workers' compensation has very little impact because it's such a small part. Ambulance services are such a small part of workers' compensation. But the PIP benefits for auto insurance, they're very important because, as you can imagine, auto insurance, motor vehicle accident victims are a large part of whom ambulance services serve. And there are two reasons that separate ambulances from other medical services. Number one, they cannot control their patient mix. They obviously cannot say, well, we're getting paid so much less for treating motor vehicle accident victims, we better not see quite so many of them. They obviously can't do that. They also have no ability to increase their rates unilaterally. Ambulance rates are set by regulation in the cities and counties where they serve. So they have no way to recoup this reduction in reimbursement. And that is what we're seeking with the amendments before you today. We have been working with John Powell, who's been very helpful, who represents State Farm, and he has asked whether we would consider the September 1st effective date to give insurers more time to retool whatever it is they retool. And we have asked our members, and they have agreed to that, the September 1st effective date in the Dash 2 amendments. And we would appreciate very much your support of that and moving this bill forward. And we'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Baird?
Sean Baird, president of the State Ambulance Association, and I just wanted to be available if there were any questions. I think Nan summarized things pretty well for us.
Great, thank you, and I understand that you are a constituent of my Senate district, so it's great to see you.
Thanks.
At least at the moment you're a constituent of my Senate district. I don't know what's going on next door in the redistricting committee. So, any questions for these witnesses? Okay, looks like you've answered them all. So thank you very much for being here and for bringing this to us. And members, we are in a work session on the bill.
Question, Madam Chair.
Yes.
The Dash 2 amendment, it sounds as though it was the favored amendment. And
well, actually, these both of these amendments are needed for this bill. The first one is the actual substance. Oh, we don't need. Oh, the Dash 2 includes the Dash 1.
Mm-hmm. Dash 2 is the one.
And, Madam Chair, I understand this is a replaces the entire measure.
Correct.
And, Madam Chairman, in the final line of the Dash 2 amendment on the SMS, there's a phrase that says effective on passage, takes effect September 1. So, Madam Chair, which is it?
Well, that is the effective date in the Dash 2 version of the bill.
It does have an emergency clause with and it prescribes an effective date.
So are we giving people a multiple choice? There's an emergency clause. It's effective on passage, and it takes effect September 1st.
I misphrased the SMS, sir.
So it's effective September 1st.
Correct.
Madam Chairman, I want to make sure I make the correct motion. The Dash 2 amendment, Madam Chair, and just for the record, which is effective on passage but takes effect on September 1st. Is that the correct motion?
Well, that wouldn't be a motion.
No.
Well, I want to make sure that we have the correct information.
The correct information, Senator Farrelly, would be declares an emergency and prescribes an effective date of September 1st, 2011. I apologize for the error.
It is not.
In my haste.
It's not a problem, Madam Chair. And thank you, Eric. So, Madam Chairman, I move the Dash 2 amendment with the clarification to Senate Bill 372.
Senator Farrelly has moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 372. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Amendment is adopted. Senator Farrelly?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 372 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And Senator Farrelly has moved Senate Bill 372 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we need a carrier on the floor. Senator Burdick, would you like to carry it?
Okay.
Great.
I'll wrestle you for it.
Yeah.
No, Senator Burdick.
Okay. Senator Burdick will carry the bill, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 372.
I know.
Okay, so looks like it might be a good time to go
to some resolutions. Mm-hmm. I believe Tom Barrows is here for
this one, and Greg Keating is here for this one, and Mike Dewey for 25. I know the other ones have members who had hoped to testify, but I don't see here yet.
Okay. So we're going to open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 21.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 21 memorializes Elwin Bill Ireland, 1915 to 2010.
Thank you, Erin. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And please go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing Roger Beyer. I remember one time somebody said a lobbyist should never come up unless he has a client. But in this case, Bill Ireland was a friend of mine. He was a longtime resident of Moala. And it was unfortunate when I heard he had passed away a little more than a year, just under a year ago. Bill had lived in town a long time, was a local businessman, and I knew him as I was growing up there in town, but I didn't know about his past. And it was interesting because he had a very, very nice home on one of the main highway streets going through the city of Moala. And so when I first decided to run for office, I decided that that would be a great place to put a lawn sign. So I went up and I knocked on his door. And he retired by then, and he came out, and we knew each other. So we chatted a little bit, and he found out I was running for state representative. And he said, "Oh, did you happen to know that I was a state representative once upon a time?" And I did not know that. And I guess that kind of just tells what kind of a guy he was. He wasn't pretentious. He was just a normal, ordinary, just a country, you know, businessman, lived there in town, and has served a couple of sessions in the legislature, and he went on to inform me, and we talked quite a while then about it, and what it was like to be a legislator, and how much he enjoyed being in the House of Representatives, and he didn't give me much of his history then. I since Tom, you know, brought this resolution forward, I learned a lot more about Bill and about all the things he had done in his life besides being a representative. And but mainly, you know, I knew him as the owner of the man shop in Moala. So Bill was just a good family community guy, and I really appreciate you taking time today to hear this resolution and hopefully pass it forward, and so we can honor the man. And you know, I was the first person to represent the city of Moala since he did, and who lived in the town of Moala. So I felt honored to know him, and thank you very much for the time today. Happy answering questions if I could.
Thank you very much for bringing this to us.
Madam Chair, members, Tom Barrows. I'm here in place of Mike Sims, who had asked to have this introduced originally, family friend of Mr. Ireland's. I had the opportunity to meet Mr. Ireland a couple times, bought me dinner at a nice restaurant once, so I'm more than happy to be here to ask you to honor him with this resolution. I'd like to point out that he was a representative 1951 to 1953, which makes him the rare one that was actually in this building before my dad was.
Wow, that's quite a statement. Okay, any questions for these witnesses? Okay, it looks like you've answered them all. Thank you very much for bringing this to us. And members, we are in a work session. Senator Beyer?
Let's see. Oh, I got the right one here. Madam Chair, I move HCR 21 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved HCR 21 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we need a carrier. Is there a volunteer?
It's from Moala.
Moala.
That'd be Freddie.
Madam Chair, is it too late to vote on the motion? It was without objection, but I'd just like to be recorded as an amendment. Thank you.
I think we had recorded you, so.
Thank you.
That's great. So is there a volunteer?
Give it to Fred.
You think that Fred would like to carry this? Okay. We will ask Senator Gerard to carry this. Okay, and I'll close the work session on HCR 21. And open... open a public hearing and work session on HCR 24.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 24 welcomes professional soccer team Portland Timbers. It has a no revenue impact statement and no fiscal impact statement, and it comes to you from the House floor on a 60-0 vote.
Great. Thank you. Looks like we have one person here to talk about this, so please go ahead and tell us about it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Greg Peden here representing the Portland Timbers. Thanks very much for hearing this resolution this afternoon. This resolution is just intended to honor and welcome the Timbers in their inaugural season in Major League Soccer. I just want to give you a little bit of an update on how the team is doing and operating. They have had a great inaugural season so far. They've sold out all of their season tickets. They've sold out all of their games. They've sold out all of their sponsorships. Last time I checked, they were second place in their division. They've established quite a long-standing rivalry with the Seattle Sounders and have developed one with the Vancouver Whitecaps and the other teams along the West Coast. And so it's a very exciting thing for Portland and Oregon, and we thank you for the opportunity to consider the resolution.
Great. Well, thank you for being here to tell us about it. Any questions? Okay. Looks like you've answered them all. So, members, we are in a work session on HCR 24. Senator Ferrioli?
Madam Chairman, I move HCR 24 to the floor with a due pass or a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Ferrioli has moved HCR 24 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Motion carries. So who's the biggest soccer fan? Okay, Senator Beyer, you win. Senator Beyer will carry this on the floor and we'll close the work session on HCR 24. Even though we're all really big Timbers.
Oh, now he's got to mix them.
I mean,
okay, so.
Got a couple of zips.
Yeah.
Your district getting all this public recognition.
Okay, so we're going to move now to open a public hearing and work session on HCR 13. And it looks like Representative McLean has joined us to tell us about it. And Erin, why don't you briefly introduce it?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. HCR 13 commemorates City of Eagle Point on 100th anniversary of its incorporation, February 16, 2011. This measure comes to you from the House floor with a 57-03 vote with a no revenue and a no fiscal.
Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee, Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I am the current state representative for Eagle Point, House District 55. Eagle Point turns 100, and they have a year-long celebration. They have commenced already their kickoff and are in the midst of some activities, including their big one coming up on the 4th of July. They are the location of the National Cemetery, where honors are still bestowed, and they are only one of three national cemeteries in Oregon. But I won't go on to the long list of accomplishments of Eagle Point, because I'm sure you're all aware of them. But I would like to at least let you know that besides being the tradition of military service and agriculture, they have one of the great golf courses in Oregon, Robert Trent Jones course. So they have, and then finally, they have the oldest natural stone mills west of the Mississippi, Butte Creek Mill, where they make fantastic bakery goods from stone ground wheat. They are looking forward to the passage of House Concurrent Resolution 13, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about Eagle Point or their centennial celebration. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thanks a lot for bringing this to us.
Thank you.
Any questions for the representative? Okay, thank you very much for being here. And we are in a work session. Members, Senator Atkinson.
I would move the HCR 13 to the Senate floor. We do adopt recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved HCR 13 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? The motion carries. And well, Senator Atkinson volunteered to carry this.
Yeah, there's a good chance that I might be involved in Eagle Point in the near future. I'd be delighted to carry their 100-year anniversary.
Okay, great. We'll look forward to that. Yeah, close the work session on HCR 13 and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3576. And it looks like Representative Holvey has joined us, so if you'd like to come forward and Erin, tell us a little about this.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3576, for the purpose of determining required habitation within a district required for serving as state representative or senator, directs elections officials to consider several factors, including but not limited to where personal mail is received, driver's license, motor vehicle registration, utility and tax return addresses, as well as voter registration, if any. The measure comes to you from the House floor with 35 ayes, 23 noes, and 2 excused. There is a no revenue impact and a no fiscal impact on the measure.
And welcome to the House Rules, the Senate Rules Committee. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I was hoping that I might get Steve Trout from the Elections Division to come up as well and maybe help with some questions. Though this bill seems simple, it is a little bit hard to understand, and I will try to articulate it. For the record, I am Paul Holvey, State Representative from District 8. Currently, to run for office for the state legislature, there's a constitutional requirement of inhabitancy. Though that seems pretty straightforward, the Secretary of State is in a position of not really having a lot of direction on what is inhabitancy. In fact, to register to vote, you certainly have residency to establish with a lot of criteria. Those criteria have basically been rolled into this bill as being able to be considered for inhabitancy under the Constitution for qualifying somebody to run for office. I will give you a short little example of this. In a particular race that I'm very familiar with, there was a candidate whose voter registration was in a district, a driver's license in a district, cast a ballot in another district, and also received mail in a district, none of which were the district that she qualified to run for office in. And you ask, how could that happen? Well, she provided an affidavit claiming that she actually did live in the other district. And on the face value, the Secretary of State has to accept that proclamation of inhabitancy because there is no statutory direction on what is or is not or what can be considered for inhabitancy. I initially started out this bill asking that to run for the state legislative office that they shall be registered in the district for which they're running, and of course that wouldn't work. And in fact, legislative counsel did inform us that actually we cannot be restrictive of the Constitution, so we cannot actually say a candidate shall be registered to vote or shall be registered to drive or shall receive mail at the address in the district. So this bill uses the word may, which caused many people to angst over why we would allow that kind of discretion to the Secretary of State to say may. But in fact, the Constitution prevents us from saying that they shall have this list of criteria to qualify to run for legislative office. And in fact, the criteria that you see in the bill before you is the same criteria as is established for voting. And that is the nuts and bolts of this particular bill. I might add that the bill does give the Secretary of State some direction so that they can make a better judgment on these cases and not wait till after the fact that somebody's actually been elected and then have to pursue their inhabitancy later.
Okay.
Simple bill.
Thank you. Yes, it looks like we have a couple of questions. A couple. Senator Atkinson.
Sure. Representative, what problem are we fixing? I'm going to be blunt, but I don't understand what the
problem is. That the current law does not establish that somebody actually lives in the district that they are running for, or essentially.
Did you have a follow-up?
Yeah. But who are we talking about here? Because my experience has been that, you know, people living in a trailer home just inside their district have gotten caught for doing that. People not running. I mean, this residency, I mean, I'm a veteran of the last redistricting mess in which this, I thought, was very clearly established between mail and licenses and I didn't know this was a problem.
Frankly, Senator, I did not know this either until last election cycle. And you know,
is there a certain circumstance that brings this bill?
Yes, and in fact, the candidate that ran against me in my district, the situation I described was the exact situation.
Madam Chair. I saw Senator Beyer first. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the Secretary of State is in a position under the Constitution as it exists today to make a judgment call about whether the person habitates in their district or not. It strikes me that all this does is say, here's some things you should consider. Actually, it says may consider, which under the Constitution that exists today, you can do it now. But I guess it plays out to, if someone gives you an affidavit and says, this is where I live, how do you treat that? I mean, how is this any different than what it is now?
That sounds like a question for
Mr. Trout. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director, and Senator Beyer, to your question. It is accurate that right now all we have to give us guidance is that the candidate must be an inhabitant of that district, and there's no, you know, there's no other guidance to tell us what inhabitant means. In the residency issues, as Senator Atkinson was discussing, there are many criteria there that we can consider for residents. And so this is one of those issues that gets really complicated really fast, because we've got inhabit in the Constitution and then residence for voting purposes in the statutes and other requirements. But to your specific question, right now we can consider any evidence that comes before us. In the case where we get an affidavit and nothing else, that's what we will rely on. So with this bill, this would give us some more criteria to look at, to put into a balancing test, in addition to an affidavit or any other information that might be presented to us, so that it wouldn't just be one piece of evidence that presented to us that we would follow, and it gives us some things to balance.
Follow up.
So, there have been a couple of occasions where people were living in a travel trailer mobile home in a district and had what looks like a more permanent structure somewhere else. How would you treat that?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, that gets back to the residency issue, because you can be a resident of the state of Oregon for voting purposes and other purposes of office and not even inhabit the state, as long as you have an intention to return. The easiest way to describe that is with college students. Say you live in Salem and you move to Eugene to go to school. You can either maintain your voting residence at your home in Salem, or you can change that to the temporary living place that you have in Eugene. And so that's the balance. I think the easiest way to explain it is you can only be registered in one place with respect to residence issues. And for residency purposes, you can really pick where that is as long as you have an intent to return. We have that a lot with members of Congress that, you know, move back to the East Coast and may or may not give up their housing here in the state, but they're still considered a resident if they intend to return. The same for military and overseas service personnel.
That just really doesn't get at the point of if they have multiple residences. It's where they, I guess, where they declare this, but this is the one I live at.
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, yes, and we see that oftentimes with people that have vacation homes that live half the year in one area and half the year the other. They'll have one spouse registered in one of those residences and one in the other, so that they have some voting representation in each of those districts. So, like I said, it gets really complicated really fast, and yeah. So the basic rule is to limit it to one person. The person gets registered in one place, and this bill just gives us some more criteria to evaluate as a total with whatever a candidate may provide to us.
Okay, well, thank you. I don't see any other questions, and we're getting quite a line of legislators behind you on other bills too. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will add that these criteria just give a decision by the Secretary of State, the Elections Division, a more defensible decision-making process. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for bringing this.
Correct the record. Apparently, you don't even have to have that old trailer in the district. It can be just close to the district line. It's sufficient. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So I'll close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3576. And we have two legislators, and it looks like we'll take Representative Freeman because I think he's got another committee meeting currently. So I will open a public hearing and work session on HJM 26. Thank you for waiting so patiently, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. For the record, my name is Tim Freeman, and I'm a state representative from House District 2. I appreciate you letting me slip ahead of some of the others. I'm supposed to be in the Rules Committee, and I know the co-chairs of the Rules Committee are looking for me as we speak. HJM 26 is part of a much bigger body of work that's been done by the Douglas County Veterans Forum on behalf of Veterans of Oregon to ask the federal government to reinstate the services that our military personnel in Southern Oregon and Northern California deserve to have. It has been a long-standing tradition in Southern Oregon at the Rosebrook facility to treat veterans with their health care needs. This facility has for many years been a state-of-the-art facility where people can receive many of the services that are required, with just a very few things having to be outsourced. Over the last 10 years or so, the services have kind of declined, and we see now with all the new veterans that are entering the system, both from the current conflicts and from the aging population of veterans from Vietnam, that, again, we need these services. And, again, this is part of a much broader body of work that has been put together, which has support from many of the cities, county, all kinds of different groups got together and want to have a big presentation to the federal government of the need of these services. And we would like to have this as part of that big body of work.
Okay, well, thank you for bringing this to us. Are there any questions for Representative Freeman? Okay, thank you very much, and we'll let you get back to the other Rules Committee.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Looks like Representative Cannon, I don't know if you have just a moment. We have one other person who could quickly testify, and then we can knock this out and then take your bill. So, Nicole, if you'd like to come forward.
And Madam Chair, as Nicole comes forward, we did receive written testimony from Representative Hannah and then from Bob Cartrell from Roseburg, and it was distributed to you by email and then in your packet today at the dais.
Hi.
Thank you.
Tell us briefly about your support for the bill. That would be great.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Nicole Hoft. I'm with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And we are here in support of HJM 26, which encourages the Congress to maintain the Roseburg VA hospital as a full capacity level 2 hospital. Essentially, about a year ago, Oregon veterans learned that Roseburg VA hospital planned to eliminate its emergency room and downsize its intensive care unit to a telemetry unit. And the hospital's plan was to shift veterans needing these services to local hospitals such as Mercy Medical in Roseburg and Sacred Heart in Eugene. As you can imagine, veterans in Southern Oregon strongly opposed the idea. Joining the veterans in their opposition was U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, Congressman Peter DeFazio, and ODVA. Simply put, veterans health care is a benefit veterans earn through their honorable military service. And Roseburg VA Hospital is responsible to the 80,000 veterans in the catchment area. There are two significant barriers to the Roseburg Hospital's plan to use a private sector hospital for the emergency care unit and ICU. Both Mercy Medical and Sacred Heart have said that they don't have the capacity to handle all the veterans who would be shifted from VA care to their care. And so, in other words, veterans could end up not being seen or having the emergency care that they need. While we understand that the VA is attempting to streamline and reduce costs, we believe that eliminating emergency room care at Roseburg is exactly the wrong way to go. And we believe that HGM 26 is an important memorial, and to let Congress know that we strongly oppose closing Roseburg. Thank you for your consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Any questions for this witness? Okay, thanks for being here. And members, we are in a work session on HJM 26. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farrioli.
I move HJM 26 to the floor to be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farrioli has moved HJM 26 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Motion carries. And I do not have a copy of this bill with me, so I don't know if there are any sponsors. And it was a Rules Committee bill, so. Yeah, how about if we ask Senator Boquist if he'd like to carry this bill, unless there's a volunteer.
Madam Chair, I was thinking that the Roseburg area is represented by Senator Cruz.
And Senator Prozanski.
And Senator Prozanski.
Yeah.
Actually, Prozanski doesn't represent Roseburg. Yet.
So we will work on getting a carrier who would like to carry the bill. And I'll close the work session on HJM 26. And thank you, Representative Cannon, for waiting so patiently. I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3112A. That was a mistake. So never mind that. And I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3148A. I think think that's what you're here to talk about.
It is. Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Ben Cannon, State Representative, House District 46 in Portland. Talk about House Bill 3148A. This came about, in my mind at least, because of some action that the legislature took last session. We significantly increased voters' pamphlet fees for candidate statements and party statements. And I think in order to sort of soften the edges of that action last session, we created a new route for candidates to avoid the fee by gathering signatures. When we passed that, I'm not sure if it was accidental or not, I think perhaps it was, we did not specify that those signatures needed to be obtained from residents, voters within the district for which the candidate is running. So the signatures can come from anywhere in the state. And it struck me that this seemed out of keeping with the signature gathering requirements for waiving the candidate filing fee. It also seemed out of step with the principle of rewarding candidates that demonstrate support from within their voters, from voters of the district. It seemed like that's sort of the purpose. Why have this alternate path? Well, because we want to reward a candidate who shows that they have support from voters in their district. And just to illustrate this, when I pursued this path, I thought, well, I don't want to pay $750 for a voter's pamphlet statement. I'll collect 300 signatures instead. It occurred to me the simplest way to do this would be to go to a meeting of the Multnomah County Democrats with a couple of hundred folks, walk around with my petition, and collect my signatures. And that's what I did. But it felt a little weird because the majority of those attendees at the Multnomah County Democrats meeting are not residents of my district. They will not be eligible to vote in my election. Yet, under the law, I was able to obtain signatures from them anyway, and it was a pretty low bar, that 300 from anywhere in the state. And in my case, it was all Multnomah County, but still, you know, whatever, 7-8 House districts potentially. It felt like a very low bar. So what this bill proposes to do is number one, require that the signatures come from voters within the district for which the candidate is running. Because of some expressions of concern about that limiting effect, we reduced the threshold from 300 to 200 for legislative offices. And we also allow the Secretary of State to do the verification. So the clerks could arrange, I'll let others speak to this, but the clerks could arrange for the Secretary of State to do the actual signature verification on that. The bigger picture here, you know, it's a pretty technical sort of housekeeping bill, but there is a question about whether we would see ballooning use of this signature process in the absence of the bill. Again, it seemed like a pretty low threshold, 300 signatures from anywhere in the state. I don't think our intent with that provision was to enable paid signature gathering firms to go to Portland or to Eugene or to other population centers to gather signatures on a paid basis in order to allow someone to reduce the cost of getting their statement in the voter's pamphlet. I think you'll hear from the Association of Oregon Counties on behalf of the clerks that this will result in greater consistency, fair distribution of costs to county election offices, and urge your support.
Okay, any questions for Representative Cannon?
I should mention, Madam Chair, we did toy with the idea in the House of increasing the requirement for senators from 300 to 30,000, but it was suggested to us that the Senate committee wouldn't look fondly upon that if we did.
So you took away a bargaining chip.
So we left you alone.
We hear about the crazy ideas that surface in the House, and we're glad to see that some of them do not make it over to the Senate.
It did not.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ferrioli.
Having never served in the House, I can only say, how soon we've forgotten.
Okay, thanks a lot, Representative
Thank
Cannon,
you.
For bringing this to us. And we have two other people signed up to testify on the bill, and they are Steve Peck and Mike Eliason. So if you'd both like to come forward, that would be great.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am not Steve Trout, State Elections Director. I am Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. Mr. Trout had to go down the hall to the House Rules Committee, so I am filling in for his in his stead. I will be very brief. We do support House Bill 3148 and thank Representative Cannon for bringing it forward out of the House over to this chamber. I will just answer one question. It was always our intent when we had the discussions 2 years ago about allowing for signatures to be gathered to place a statement in the voter's pamphlet that they would be within a district, just as it is to file for candidacy by petition. That bill moved out of the session at the very end, and that piece escaped our attention and others as the bill moved forward. And so when Representative Cannon approached us about this issue, we agreed to work with him on the bill. And I think that's the sum of my testimony. Thank you. I'm happy to answer questions.
Great. Why don't we hear from Mike?
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties here on behalf of the Association of County Clerks. Again, we also support the bill. It may actually make for a little bit more work for certain smaller counties that we're seeing people go to Portland or Eugene, as Representative Cannon said earlier. But we believe it's a more equitable, fair distribution. And as Mr. Pack said, it was the intent to begin with. So we do support the bill and urge passage. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for these guys? Senator Ferrioli.
The nomination by petition originally proposed, how many signatures are required, and were there any residency requirements or locational limitations after?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli. The provisions in the law that allow a candidate to file their candidacy by petition, is that your question?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. It is required that those signatures be of voters within the district for which the candidate has filed. And I believe it's 50 signatures or something. No, it's $50, I'm sorry, or $25. I will have to check on the exact number. It's a small number of signatures as well to qualify for the ballot.
Clarifying question, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Was there a proposal from the Secretary of State to modify the petition, the nomination by petition?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, no.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, I guess it stuck in my mind that it was 50 signatures or $50, but
yeah, I mean, and this probably somebody could just look this up. It would be great if we had Steve Trout here. It used to be that it was a percentage of the number of votes cast in the last election for office. And unless that's changed, that's probably still what the formula is. But I will stand corrected if I'm wrong about that. So
we need to let any of those facts stand in the way of our ability to act.
This bill obviously doesn't affect that one way or the other, but I'm sure it's more than 50, because I can remember it being a lot of work to go out and get all those signatures, and I know if Senator Burdick were here, she would talk about the same thing. Okay, so I don't see any more questions, and thank you for being here. So, members, we are in a work session. Are we ready to take action on this bill?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Ferrioli.
I move House Bill 3148 A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ferrioli has moved House Bill 3148 A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Motion carries. And do we have a volunteer who would like to carry this? I would be happy to carry it. So the chair will carry the bill. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 3148. And we'll take a moment to see where we are. 25.
I've not seen him.
Yeah.
So that would be our
Okay, so how about if we open a public hearing and work session on... Yeah, on HCR 25. And we have a sign-up sheet and people who've been waiting patiently to talk about this.
Yes, HCR 25 commemorates IBM on the occasion of its centennial, June 16th, 2011. Comes to you from the House floor with a 58-2-0 vote. No revenue and no fiscal impact on the HCR.
Okay, thanks a lot for being here and for waiting so patiently.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Fawn McNeely, representing IBM. We'd like to thank the committee for considering this resolution today that commemorates IBM on its 100th anniversary. With me is Steve Hill, a 30-year veteran from IBM, to address the resolution.
Thank you, Fawn. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, thank you for having us here this afternoon. I'm honored to be in such august company as the fine Southern Oregon community of Eagle Point, also celebrating its 100th year this year. So, as Fawn said, I've been with IBM for well over 30 years here in Salem, serving the state of Oregon as a client. And so we're very appreciative of that business relationship for all these many years. IBM's a very healthy employer in the state of Oregon, and we appreciate your consideration of this measure. Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions for these witnesses? Okay, I don't see any. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And members, we are in a work session on HCR 25. Senator Farioli, do you have a motion?
Madam Chairman, I move HCR 25 to the floor of the be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 25 with a be adopted recommendation to the floor. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And, okay, Senator Beyer will carry Big Blue to the floor. And we'll close the work session on HCR 25. So, yeah, we might as well knock that out. Okay, I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3357A. Karen?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. HB 3357A requires Secretary of State to adopt a rule related to upcoming election expeditiously. This measure comes to you from the House floor with a 59-01 vote. There is a no revenue impact statement and no fiscal impact statement on the original measure. And there's nobody signed up, Madam Chair.
Okay, no one signed up to testify on this bill. I know Representative Berger would have liked to be here but wasn't able to be here today. So, members, is there any desire to discuss this bill?
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
The definition of expeditiously subjective, or it's somewhat subjective, in my opinion. It looks like the initial proposal was for not less than 90 days after the law requiring the rule became active. But expeditiously has been substituted.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered, is there as many different definitions for the term expeditiously as there are folks that hear the term?
Well, I suppose we could ask the Deputy Secretary of State to tell us what that means, or we could look it up in the dictionary, either one.
That's probably tight enough that you could do circles with an 18-wheeler in it.
The 59 House members thought that was a good idea. So, would you like to hear from the Secretary of State?
What is the definition of expeditiously, Madam Chair?
Do you want me to look it up?
Well, in the context of the bill, so, I mean, if we need the bill, then there should be some sort of parameters around it, the terminology.
You want to establish a record?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. I think, Senator Farioli, the issue that came up as we discussed the bill in the House was the original time frame of a set time frame posed some problems because a lot of the work in administering an election is done by rule, the vote-by-mail manual, for instance, which changes the processes by which counties administer ballots and count them and all of that as technology changes, as other changes occur, all adopted by rule. And as the bill had been originally drafted, we would not have been able to change the vote-by-mail manual except for within that first 90 days. And so where we landed, working with Representative Berger, was on the term expeditiously, which would have perhaps a number of definitions in a number of dictionaries, but the idea being as quickly as possible in order for the folks that are affected by the rule change to be able to plan.
How would an elector complain if they felt that the expedition is taking too long?
If we were not expeditious enough, Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, they would file a complaint as they would file any other complaint in our office. And I'm not sure we've thought about how that would get processed in terms of how we would investigate our own expeditiousness.
It would be processed expeditiously, Madam Chair.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well, I just think that expeditious is a terminology that means nothing. And the question I would have is, if you need more time than 120 days is as good as 90, or perhaps it's better, but at least there's a date specific. But expeditiously, to me, it leaves, you could say, under the circumstances, we responded expeditiously. It just leaves it too open, Madam Chair, for my purposes.
Okay, thank you for your thoughts, Senator Ferrioli, and thank you for your testimony. And we will close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3357. And the committee will stand at ease for just a moment while we figure out where we are. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 22. And unfortunately, I know Representative Krieger wanted to be with us, but he must be busy in other places. So we have Court Boyce here and also Aaron to tell us about the bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. HCR 22 memorializes the life of Alan Perry Boyce, 1926 to 2010. This measure comes to you from the House floor with a 58-02 vote.
Thank you very much for being here and for waiting so patiently.
Thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum and committee members. This is a resolution sponsored by my friend, Representative Krieger, and my friend and boss, Representative Girard. And they have their first afternoon floor session today, so they asked if I would be here. Alan Boyce is my father, so it's a proud opportunity for me. He was a man that was loved by people and loved people very much. Second youngest of 12 children. Born in 1926, went into the Marine Corps, and was one of the first American GIs into Japan, September of 1945. So a tremendous, tremendous time in his life. He used to, after being a logger for 10 years, he used to joke and say, well, I sobered up and they made me town sheriff. But he took his law enforcement very serious. He was a polygraph examiner. He wasn't actually that great on the wires, but he could get anybody the cop-out, I think, that just by surely encouraging them to tell the truth. He had a tremendous disdain for child abusers and drug pushers in the 60s, and he fought very, very hard to keep it out of his county. He was controversial, but of all the tremendous public servants that I've known in my life, he was a very, very dedicated one, and I'm proud to say that. He and his brothers did a tremendous amount for Southern Oregon, in particular Rogue River, but also law enforcement in general in Southern Oregon. And we lost him last November, and just a tremendous man growing up. He was a phenomenal, bigger-than-life character, and loved Oregon, loved his country, and again, just proud to be able to be here and testify for you folks, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Great. Well, he sounds like a remarkable guy, and quite a loss, and thank you very much for taking the time to be here to tell us about your dad.
Thank you again.
Any questions? Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks a lot. And members, we are in a work session. I know that Representative Krieger would have been here. I'm sure he's detained somewhere important.
And Chair?
Yes, Senator
I'm
Farioli.
I move HCR 22 to the floor with the adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 22 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Motion carries. And do we have a volunteer to carry this on the floor? We can certainly find.
I would bet Senator Cruz would like to do that.
Senator Cruz. Okay, we'll ask Senator Cruz to carry it on the floor. And we will close the work session on HCR 22.
That would complete our agenda.
Yeah. So I think, members, given that we do have barely a quorum and we're missing some paperwork on some of our other bills, what I'm going to do at this point is carry over everything that's on our agenda, which we don't really have to do because we could repost it, but I'm going to carry over House Bill 3658, 3576, 3357, and House Bill 2433 in public hearing and work session to our next hearing.
Thursday.
And that will be, at this point, it appears to be Thursday at our usual
time. At our usual time, unless there is a conflict with the Joint Registering Committee, two of our members do serve on that as well, so we'll make sure there's no conflict.
Right. So stay tuned. And
Madam Chair, would you read those numbers again, please?
Sure. House Bill 3576, 3658, 3357, and 2433. And Erin, you'll correct me if I missed anything.
No, Madam Chair, you are correct.
Okay, great. And with nothing further to come before us today, we are adjourned.